and welcome to the latest edition of the IDEA Podcast, brought to you by the Irish Development Education Association. I'm your host, Maximiliana Mtenga. In today's episode, we are going to talk about visualizing Palestine in the lens of global citizenship education. And our guest today is Aline Bataşay, who is the Executive Director of Visualizing Palestine, an organization that uses data and research to visually communicate Palestinian experiences to provoke narrative change. They envision a liberated future for Palestinians in a world free from oppression. Aline has more than 20 years of experience working with several Palestinians and international nonprofits at the intersections of gender equality, reproductive justice, children's rights, mental health, and social justice. Welcome, Aline, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Maximiliana, for having me. I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
Okay, so to begin our conversation, could you start by sharing your initial experience with visualizing Palestine? And why do you think you have been successful to stand in solidarity with Palestine?
Thank you, Maximiliana. So Visualizing Palestine was actually founded in 2012 by two co-founders, Remzi Jaber and Jumana Al-Jabri. And I only came into, sort of took leadership in 2021 as the first executive director. It was co-founded and co-directed up until early 2020s. And then, you know, I stepped in. But when the co-founders founded Visualizing Palestine in 2012, they wanted to have an initiative that really brought attention to the data and the vast amount of information on Palestine through infographics and through visual storytelling, because there is so much research on Palestine that it's almost over-researched context. But a lot of people don't engage with, you know, heavy material, they don't engage with human rights reports, and the co-founders at the time, infographics were a very new way to convey information. And at the time, they wanted to make use of this new way of communicating Palestinian experiences and stories. And so we're still very much focused on using data and research to visually communicate Palestinian experiences to provoke narrative change. At the end of the day, we also want to change the status quo in Palestine. And we want to really challenge those negative narratives on Palestine that are put forth by Israel and its allies. So in terms of solidarity, you know, when I first heard you say this question, to me, we are very much part of the Palestinian liberation movement. One of our co-founders was Palestinian. I am Palestinian. So I don't see ourselves as an organization that's in solidarity with Palestine. I see ourselves as very much part and parcel of the Palestinian community and the Palestinian liberation movement. And just as, you know, Palestinians and all over the world, right? You know, we have 7 million Palestinians that are in Palestine. We have 7 million that are outside of Palestine. So we're very much kind of representative of Palestinians and the Palestinian diaspora, and the fact that the struggle is borderless in a way, right? So I wanted to just mention that we consider ourselves as very much part and parcel of the movement. And it's difficult to assess success, right? Because at the end of the day, we want to change the status quo and we haven't done that. And we want to end the genocide and we haven't done that. But the success comes from the fact that we are putting forth resources for activists, movement leaders, students, academics, to take those tools to both learn about Palestine, but also to teach about Palestine and to take action on Palestine. Many of our tools are action oriented. They collaborate with campaigns that are done to hold governments accountable, to hold corporations accountable. So that's where the success is that we are resourcing the movement and the movement is able to take up those resources and use them in campaigns or education or to learn, you know, for also people who just want to learn about Palestine and don't have the time to, you know, read reports or are visual learners. And then the last thing I want to mention is that all of our visuals are Creative Commons licensing, which means that everyone can use our visuals as long as we are credited. The visual is not changed in any way. It's not used for commercial purposes. So at the end of the day, we create those resources because we want people to use them and because we want to make sure that people have access to information. So hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was very insightful. You mentioned something very important there, Palestinian diaspora. And also you mentioned that you are part and parcel of the movement. It's important that you guys are out here And all of us are out here and trying to be part and parcel of what is going on and just try to advocate for them. So, working with Visualizing Palestine, given the current political atmosphere, how have the challenges changed since the war began? And did you have to employ more ethical practice when advocating for Palestine?
Yeah, thank you. Such an important question, right? Honestly, I think the biggest challenge for us is that it feels like whatever we do is seems inadequate. You know, we do our work because we want to change the status quo. We want to put an end to the current genocide and to the ongoing oppression. And what we're seeing on the ground is that things only keep getting worse and worse. And even though we see public support, we see the world is standing with us, unfortunately, that is not putting an end to what the Israeli government is doing. And it's also because it's also supported by powerful governments that do have the power to change the reality and to hold Israel accountable. And that's not happening, obviously. So what we have seen over the past year and a half is that the demand for our work has actually increased. And while we've been able to meet some of the demand, there's always so much more that we can do. And, you know, we haven't been able to meet all the needs that are out there for material and information. And because every day there's something new that's happening. So part of our work is really to contextualize the situation, to put the current situation in Gaza, in Palestine, within its historical context of ongoing Nakba and Israeli settler colonialism. So I think these are important aspects and continuing aspects of our work. In terms of ethical practice, I'll say that, you know, our work has always centered Palestinian experiences and Palestinian stories, and these are the stories that are constantly being erased and obscured by Israel and mainstream media as well. It has been quite complicit in distorting the narrative and distorting reality. And our role is really to make sure that when we tell Palestinian stories, we're telling those stories while we're honoring Palestinians there and centering their dignity. This is really a very important part of this work, right? Mohammed El-Kurds just wrote a book called Perfect Victims. And really the idea is also not to always, you know, not to talk about Palestinians as the perfect victims. A perfect example of this is how oftentimes people with good intentions even focus on, you know, how 70% of Palestinians killed in Gaza are women and children, which is, you know, which is an important fact. But also, does this mean that the 30% who are men are not important? So it's very important to make sure that when we're messaging, we're talking about how all people are deserving of life. A core principle of ours is wanting to maintain the dignity, the agency of people in our stories, the fact that we're also more than our grief, you know, that we're also human beings that enjoy life and that have culture and that have art, and that have families, you know. So I think all of that is really important aspect of the work that we do, that we, you know, talk about our lives, our dreams, our stories. And within our research, the human story and experiences continue to be very compelling aspects. And so especially over the past year and a half, we know that highlighting the number of people killed is not enough. First of all, it's not accurate anymore. We hear about 50,000 killed, 60,000 killed. We actually know that the numbers are much higher, that there are in the hundreds of thousands. Because of the inaccuracy of that data, it doesn't mean that we don't refer to it. We always add the caveat that numbers are probably much higher than this. But this is why we also want to focus on the stories of people to say that, you know, the reason that the numbers aren't accurate is because the health system in Gaza has been decimated, you know, by Israel. So continuously bringing attention to the challenges that exist in data, but also to the whole reason why we do this work. You know, people's stories are data as well, and we need to always continue to center people in our stories, which is what we focus on.
Yeah, well, people's stories are data as well. It's food for thought for sure. It's kind of mesmerizing to think that all that we do, the advocating of Palestine that we do, is we need to remind ourselves as human that people of Palestine or Palestinians are also human being. It's quite difficult to comprehend that we have to explain to one another about another human being to explain how these people are also people. I think you guys are doing a massive amount of work to make sure that we advocate for peace and justice for Palestinians. So we have seen that creativity has brought awareness of Palestine in these difficult times where there is an ongoing active war on Palestine. How do you center justice in the solutions you pursue and the way you pursue them?
Yeah, thanks, Maximilia. Also, very important question. The main focus of our work and our visual storytelling is to shed light on the root causes of oppression in Palestine. So everything that we do is basically centered on justice. It's centered on collective liberation. It's centered on imagining a different future and the possibilities of a different future. Because if we don't have imagination, a lot of people say, "But this is the reality. This is it's complicated." Well, really, it actually isn't. You know, it actually isn't. If we center human beings, it actually isn't complicated. And if we don't start with imagining a different future, then we cannot work towards a different future, right? So I think that's really important aspect of our work and of all of our work, really, if we want the reality to change at the end of the day. So our work, you know, doesn't necessarily propose solutions. We don't speak on behalf of all Palestinians. There are bigger questions that us as a small team would not be able to answer or tackle. You know, this is part of a much larger discussion. But part of what we do is really we talk about the root causes, which is military occupation, which is apartheid, which is settler colonialism, which is currently genocide, and then tying all of these together, right? Because they're tied together. And then also really making connections with other intersectional movement issues, which is really important. So bringing in, you know, reproductive rights issues, bringing in the environmental justice, bringing in Black Palestinian solidarity, bringing in what the indigenous all over the world have gone through in terms of erasure and colonization. Even when we look at the context in Ireland and looking at the historical relationship and the historical relationship to occupation, right? With a very common source of occupation, which is the British colonizers. So I think bringing attention to all of these intersections is also very, very important. And bringing attention to how all of our liberation is really tied together as human beings. We're more tied than ever, actually, also with how its access to information has also become much easier today than, you know, we can't say no one knows what's happening in Palestine. People know what's happening in Palestine. It's a live stream genocide. But some people decide to look away, you know, which is really unfortunate and painful. So I think what I'll say is one thing that we focus on very, very closely at Visualizing Palestine is boycott, divestment, and sanctions. We focus on how the movement has grown since 2005. So, for example, we have a timeline on our website. It's called the Growth of a Movement Timeline. It's an interactive website, and it shows all the successes of the BDS movement since 2005. And we're actually revamping and relaunching this platform over the next few months. And we have a lot of visuals that center, you know, boycott, divestment, and sanctions activities. And we are committed to those principles, which if people are listening to this podcast don't really know what it is, but there are three demands of the BDS movement, and that is equality for Palestinian citizens of Israel, the right of return for Palestinian refugees, and an end to military occupation. So these are really very core principles to the work that we do and the work that the BDS movement does. And it really brings the demands together. And it also means that you are ne not negating anyone else's rights or to live on the land. So I think this is, you know, a challenge that I would bring to people around, you know, who challenge BDS, because it's really about bringing justice for everyone on the ground. And we have a lot of visuals that talk about, you know, some of the successes. We really focus a lot on, for example, divestment on university campuses. And we also bring attention to some of the challenges to BDS. So, for example, we have a visual that highlights how anti-Palestinian boycott laws in the US have proliferated over the past few years and have actually been used as templates to suppress other movements, including fossil, you know, those who challenge fossil fuel, including abortion rights, LGBTQ rights. So this also even shows that also tactics of repression are used the same way, you know, to oppress different movements. And this is why it's really important for all of us to unite and to also, you know, challenge those oppressive structures together.
Okay, thank you so much. And you mentioned that it's not that complicated. But the complication part of the things when you talk to people, some saying the geopolitics political aspect of it, and some will talk about religion aspect of it, some will talk about Zionism, and some will talk about just new colonialism, and some will talk about militarization, and some will talk about genocide, some will talk about apartheid, and also some slogans that have been used by both Palestinians, for example, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And on the other side of the coin, the Israel are saying that never again, referring to what happened in the past, where the Jewish people were killed. So these are the things that people find complicated, when they put them in one bucket. I know you already answered the question already, but with regards to the complication side of it, how can you make it simple for a layman or for young people? How can you make them understand?
Yeah, this is a difficult question because I think people use the conversation around how complicated it is to sort of excuse themselves from responsibility, right? Or they say, oh, it's too complicated, so I can't have a discussion. But if it was your family, if it was your people, then it wouldn't be complicated, right? I think, it's not complicated when we say never again, then it's never again for anyone, right? It's not just never again for Jews who experienced, the horrible experience of the Holocaust and went through that, but it's also never again for anyone. And what does that mean, right? What does that mean? Is it really complicated to say that children shouldn't be targeted and killed, health workers shouldn't be targeted and killed, journalists shouldn't be targeted and killed, people shouldn't be held captive in an open air prison, even before October 7th in Gaza with very little access to water. People in Gaza, before October 7th, 97% of water in Gaza was undrinkable. So none of this is new. I mean, you're saying how do we simplify it? I think it's, people really wanting to learn, people wanting to challenge themselves, because it's so easy to just say this is too complicated. And I think that with the work that we do, we're basically inviting people to engage with this material, with this information. That is, some of it's a data statement. We have a visual actually that shows you how 97% of water in Gaza was undrinkable before October. And then you have visuals that are a little bit more complex in the sense because the structure of oppression is complex. So it's not complicated, but the structure is complex. There are different systems of apartheid that affect Palestinians in Jerusalem differently than they do in the West Bank, than they do in Gaza, than they do for Palestinians who are citizens of Israel, or that impact Palestinians who live outside of Palestine. And this is done on purpose because Israel wants to, A, fragment Palestinian society so that it can control Palestinian society better, but it also wants to make it complicated for people from the outside world to understand what's happening, right? And I think where it begins actually is in education, which is why I love engaging with IDEA, because you all are focused so much on global education and global development education, right?
Yeah, thank you so much. And you mentioned there the global citizenship education sector. As advocates within the global citizenship education sector, how can we move beyond reporting and discussions to ensure effective action for Palestinian rights?
We have to make sure that we're integrating Palestinian history in curriculum, that we have culture days for Palestine in schools, that students are introduced to this topic, and that we don't actually engage in this is a complicated situation discussion. And I think it's very important to think about, we keep saying, one day everyone will have been against this. That's not okay, and that's not enough. We have people that are being killed today, and we need everyone sort of to step up in different ways, right? Because we all have different roles. We don't all have the same power or the same role, right? In government, people have different roles. In university, people have different roles, So we saw Trinity University divest from Israel last year because of the student encampment. So students played a role there, a very important role. And then governments also have a role to have an arms embargo, to hold the government accountable. And Ireland is an example of a country that has taken some steps. There are more steps that it can take, obviously, to hold Israel accountable. But I think that there's so much that people can and should be doing to play a role in ending the atrocities that are happening today.
So, as part of visuals, which we have already seen a huge significance of, what can global citizenship educators do practically if they want to support deepening Palestine initiative towards justice?
I think part of this question also has to do with really integrate Palestine in all of education systems. So holding teach-ins on Palestine, holding education days on Palestine, actively integrating Palestine into teaching curriculum, centering Palestinian experiences and stories, placing current developments in their historical context, I think is really important. I think part of what we're seeing is really an obscuring of what's happening. What Israel and its allies are doing today is trying to say, oh, this is anti-Semitic, to shut down all speech. I think it's very important to talk about the differences between Zionism and Judaism. You know, these are what Israel has done is to like really conflate these two issues together. And that's a problem and that needs to be challenged. But it's also done in a way to distract us from actually working towards justice, challenging what's happening on the ground in Palestine. And so I think it's important for us not to be distracted, because some of the tools that Israel is using right now is to distract educators from the core issues that they need to be teaching about. So, for example, you mentioned earlier from the river to the sea, right? That a lot of Zionists and Israelis are saying this is a call to genocide. There is an active genocide that's happening in Palestine right now, from the river to the sea, you know, by the Israeli government. So really focusing on, you know, the facts on the ground, you know, deepening initiatives also with Palestinians that are in Palestine. And I know there are some initiatives that are, you know, already happening in Ireland where there is an exchange between universities. I think also, I'm not sure what the, you know, if the school system allows that, but exchanging student experiences in K to 12 secondary education, elementary education between students in Ireland and in Palestine, so that we can, you know, deepen some of that understanding and collaboration and shared history also. So, you know, really looking at that shared history between Ireland and Palestine. There's shared history in other contexts as well. But since we're, you know, talking about Ireland specifically, I think that that would be important. And really taking an active role in thinking, okay, beyond education, what is it that we can do with this information? Information is great and it's an important place to start, but then what is our role as educators, as people who are engaged with the work of justice, to take that information and to use it to try to change the reality? And not all of us honestly have the same role to play, right? Some of us have advantages within our work that allows us to do that work. Some of us are, solidarity is also not without risk, but it's also important. Sometimes there's a greater risk when we don't take action, right? So I think putting that into perspective, and also with people who have more advantages, there's less to risk, really. There's always some discomfort when we're working towards change. And I think that that's important to embrace, right? So I guess, not sure if that answers the question, but these are some of the things that, you know, I would recommend for people to embrace within their practice.
Thank you so much for joining us, Aline. That was very insightful. Many thanks for our listeners for tuning in to this edition of the IDEA Podcast, the National Network for Development and Global Citizenship Education in Ireland. You can learn more about IDEA by visiting www.ideaonline.ie. This episode is funded by the Irish Aid at the Department of Foreign Affairs. Irish Aid is the government's overseas development program. Irish Aid also supports global citizenship education in Ireland to ensure learning and public engagement with global issues. The ideas, opinions, and comments herein are entirely the responsibility of the Irish Development Education Association and do not necessarily represent or reflect the Department of Foreign Affairs. Police.